Hey, folks, what a show we have for you today. Very excited about it, but I'm also very excited to tell you about the sponsor we're working with here over at Verbal Shenanigans. As we turn the corner from the cold, dreary winter into the warmer days of spring, a new season of fantasy baseball begins at DynastySportsEmpire.com. DynastySportsEmpire.com offers you a unique fantasy baseball experience for owners young and old and abilities of all levels. So what makes DSE unique? For starters, you can draft high school and international baseball phenoms as young as 16. You can retain ownership of your favorite players for their entire career and build a cash cow contender that would make any front office envious for years to come. Check out all the fantasy baseball formats over at DynastySportsEmpire.com today or tweet them at DSC Fantasy. That's at DSC Fantasy on Twitter or online at DynastySportsEmpire.com. All right, guys, let's get to today's episode.
Cheers. This is Sam from Dogfish, and you're experiencing Verbal Shenanigans. Good on you.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, folks. How are you doing? Welcome back to another episode of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. And we have a good one for you. Hopefully we have a good one. At least then we know our guest is good. Well, as far as us, can't guarantee anything for the next half hour.
Yeah, it's like betting on green on a roulette wheel. Technically, you have a shot.
Right.
But every time somebody puts money on there, you're like, really?
Yeah. And it's appropriate that we would be the zero and the double zero, if you will.
Yeah, well, I'm the double zero. I'm the co-host, and I'm the extra zero.
You know, when I was a kid, I got a Devil's jersey. It was like my favorite present I ever got. And it was it said Brennan on the back, and double zero was the number I chose. My grandma gave it to me. Like, it was like pretty cool back then. It was like, you know, custom jersey with the actual like sewn on letters and everything. And I remember when I met Martin Brodeur, I was a little kid at like an autograph signing kind of event. And he's like, oh, I see you got my jersey. Cause he probably saw like the BR and the zero. And I'm like, no, Marty, I have my jersey. It's my name. And he's just like, oh, okay. Like, it was, I had like an awkward exchange with arguably the best goalie of all time.
Well, I would just like say yes and hide the other side. Yeah, it's your jersey. See, there's a devil on the front. It has an N and a J, and the J's a devil's tail.
Yeah, it was nothing like being like, I don't know, in fifth grade. It was probably fifth grade, like right in the wheelhouse of like my devil's love. Like everything for me was like the New Jersey Devils. Like, I would cut out the articles from the paper and tape them to my closet and make, like, then they won the cup, and it was crazy. But nothing like an awkward exchange with, like, you know, everybody loved Brodeur, and, like, he was, like, the guy, and then, like, having a weird exchange that didn't go quite correctly when you were a kid. It was a little weird.
So, like, you met your hero, and you went home disappointed in yourself.
Kind of.
That basically describes our podcast in a nutshell. You know, we put your heroes on the show, but then you leave here going, I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much this whole podcast is like redemption for me as a child. Like, you know, we try to reach out to like things we liked as a kid and things we grew up on and music we listened to. So really, this whole thing is just me and you recapturing our childhood and not being able to move on as men going forward. I really think that's kind of what the podcast is for us.
On a side note, speaking about the number double zero, I forget who it was. I know the Mets. It was Walker. He has to change his number for the fourth time in his career because he. He was 99 on his last team.
Right.
And he picked 99 basically because He's like, all right, who else? Unless I go to the Yankees, it's not an issue.
Right.
So he signs with the Mets, and apparently Mr. Met is number 99, so he has to go back to double zero.
Mr. Met has priority over their pitching staff? It's interesting. I can't even picture Mr. Met with a number. I forget.
Well, let me. Maybe I messed up the number. So let's. But it was either 99 or double zero. Okay, so
I think it's double zero.
Yeah, at one time he was number 99.
I wonder if it was.
And then he changed it to double zero, and then he goes to the Mets, and Mr. Met is double zero, so he has to go back to 99.
It's pretty great when the mascot has more priority over the guys who can actually win games for you. But, you know.
you think he's, like, going up to the dude who has the big bobblehead and he's, like, trying to throw him cash so he can get his number?
I have a friend of my brother's actually had Mr. Met at his wedding. They, like, hired Mr. Met to come. I guess he does those kind of things on the side. But
like
he,
the legit like, Mr. Met?
Like the Mr. Met, like through the Mets organization, had the Mr. Met come.
Now, my question is, okay, so they paid the Mets money. Did legit guy who plays Mr. Met? But then again, you guys have like three or four people who play Mr. Met, if I recall.
Yeah, I would imagine there's a crew of Mr. Mets. I would imagine nowadays, like, it might be rare for like one guy to do all the mascotting. Yeah. Out there, especially with how much the mascots do now and like other events. I can't imagine it's still like old school where it's like, you know, like when we talked to the San Diego Chicken, he was Ted Giannoulis or however he says the last name. He was like the chicken. I can't imagine it's just, I bet you it's like a committee of Mr. Mets. I mean, there's Mrs. Met too. There's there's got to be a couple guys.
Yeah. So basically, your friends spend like an extra $5,000 on his wedding, and you know he got like the double A Mr. Met. He didn't get prime time, like this is the dude who gets the costume if we hit the playoffs and we're national TV Mr. Met. This is we got the Los Angeles Angels coming in for a Wednesday afternoon game, and somebody's got to entertain the 10,000 that actually took a day off to see this game.
Yeah. Remember when Mr. Met got in trouble a couple years ago for like flipping off a fan or something like that? Very un Mr. Met. Like the Fanatic, you could see him doing that. He's a little reckless.
I wouldn't say for the Fanatic. Gritty, that mofo would do it in a heartbeat. And I think he probably did it in his interview. It's like, yes, this guy has to get in this orange costume and googly eyes now.
You know, when I was a kid, I that was like one of the things I wanted to be was like a mascot. And then like I got my one shot to do it, and I've told the story in the podcast that my dad's like he had like a grand opening kind of thing for his business, and he wanted me to be Mickey Mouse, and I was probably like 12 years old, and I got into the Mickey Mouse costume like halfway up my legs. And I was sitting in the back room just like sobbing that I didn't want to be Mickey. I didn't want to put on the silly costume. And so I think that was the beginning and end of my mascot days.
I mean, I don't really consider that. Like, that's like an amusement park mascot. That's way different than a sports mascot. Like, sports mascot, like, you're like the party. Like, you're just like. It's like, oh, come on, let's go. We got seventh inning. We got to do this. And all riling up everybody, high-fiving, finding the guys who got the shirts off and painted the letters on their chest.
Or like all Philadelphia fans is what you're saying.
Yeah, like just flat out find these people. And they go, woo, yeah. Like that's what I look at as a sports mascot and all. You putting on the Mickey Mouse outfit? No. There's only one person that would be ecstatic about it, and she's upstairs right now. Yeah.
Well, anyway, everybody, welcome to the show. If you're a new listener, that is Mike there, and I'm Scott, and we are 347 episodes into this show. It's like, you know, as the weeks go by, I'm like, whoa, you know, we're starting to get up there. We're starting to almost at the descent towards 400 now. As we, you know, a couple more, and we're closer to 400 than we are 300. So
yeah, I guess 2022, like early on, then it should be 53. Yeah, there's 52 weeks in a year, so basically around this time next year.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
We'll be 400.
But today's a big one. But anyway, I was thinking about I was going through our episodes the other day to try to do something on Instagram or whatever. First off, the Instagram we talked about last week, like, is almost impossible to figure out. But I was going through some old episodes, and I went back all the way to the beginning. And one of the episodes that actually got a lot of listens, it was kind of right at the beginning of our, kind of towards our start, was when we were talking about your one-legged uncle.
Uncle Jimmy, yeah. The one-legged gay uncle.
Yeah. Yes. Now, Uncle Jimmy's been brought up many, many times throughout the years. He's been, you know, we referred to him. We brought back up his story. But it made me think, I don't know if I've ever told you much about my Uncle Bo.
Ooh.
Like, so it made me kind of like, oh, you know, like, I haven't, you know, because part of doing a cast with, like, the same, it's me and you every single week. So coming up with things that maybe I don't know about, you don't know about me, I don't know about you, starts to become like, how do I don't know. But I don't recall if I ever talked about Uncle Bo too much. Maybe I mentioned him before, but everybody's got a crazy member of their family. Now, there's a lot of mystery around Uncle Bo.
Okay.
Uncle Bo was my grandfather's younger brother. So he's, I guess that's what, my great uncle, technically? Great uncle, I think they call it.
I never know.
I don't even know who my dad is. I am just going to be honest with you.
Yeah, seriously, like, I call people in my family uncle, and they're like, his mother, brother? I'm like, I don't really know.
Yeah.
It's like, it says Perlew at the end, so I guess they're related in some way. I don't know.
So Uncle Bo was, he was the life of the party kind of guy. If he showed up, you know how, like, when you're young, you don't realize that maybe someone's been drinking all day, and you're like, man, Uncle Bo is so cool. Like, he's so much fun, and he's boisterous, and he sings, and he dances, and like, you have this amazing view on that person, but, like, maybe the rest of the family is kind of like, you know, he's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. So Uncle Bo was, like, the guy. He was a big, burly guy. He was a truck driver for years, and, like, was able to kind of retire early. Like, he did his, like, whatever, 30 years with, like, the same trucking company and was done. And he drove, like, a convertible, and he had a little condo in Florida and a camper in the Poconos. So he would travel back, you know, through the seasons, you know, come to the Poconos door in the summer and then go down to Florida in the winter. He was, like, it was very unique. He had, like, a bird. Like, he had a bird that he took care of.
Kind of bird we talk about? A little small one? One of those crazy huge parrots?
Like, no, like a little, maybe like a cockatiel, I guess, kind of something. Like, okay. one of those common pet birds. I'm not into birds, by the way. Like, I'm not into birds at all. Like, never in my life have I ever wanted a bird.
Yeah, like, the little birds, that's a weird one to have as a traveling companion. I mean, it just seems weird. It seems like if I'm going away somewhere, it's just like, you have a bird now. You just give it, you just find the neighbor. It's like, who wants a bird? Who wants a bird? I'm going away for 3 months. Who wants a bird? Like, if you spent, like, $3,000 on, like, some rare African parrot that, like,
can right.
say, like, 800 words, yeah. I'm not leaving that thing with anybody. You know, that mofo's coming with me down to Florida. But, like, a little parakeet, I mean, just the trouble. Like, every time you hit your brakes and all, you're wondering, oh, did I kill the bird?
Yeah.
And I got a thing that just flies to the other side of the cage and whacks itself.
Yeah. And, like we keep dogs in cages when they're little, and people have, like, gerbils and hamsters. But there's always something about keeping a bird in a cage, like an animal that flies and can only fly in, like, a box. It's always kind of weird to me, you know? Like, the whole analogy of spreading your wings, and here we are, like, keeping birds on a little stick, and they just poop on paper all day long.
Not to interrupt your story, but I'll tell a very quick one. My dad had a guy he worked with. He had like, I don't know what kind of bird, but it was, I would say, in the range of those like special parrots or, and then the cat, those categories, not a little parakeet or whatever. Mm-hmm. So like he actually trained it to like, it, we'd let it fly like on a little like rope or whatever, and the bird would always come back to him.
Well, if it was on a rope, it's pretty easy to get him back.
Well, no, you know what I mean.
Just like yank him back.
Long string, like that's how they train like some of these birds, where it's like, all right, you're in the living room, it flies around, you like, you make a command, it comes back to your hand.
I'm just picturing your dad's friend be like, look, it comes back, and just yanking him as hard as possible. he's so trained. He's amazing.
He's trained because he's got a broken neck. Mm-hmm. But so the one day he finally goes, all right, I got this bird trained. We're going to do the real test.
Yeah.
He took it outside.
Oh, no.
Took off. Never saw him again. It's like, I ain't going back on that string.
Yeah, I feel like a bird's life, more than any of those other domesticated pets, is just, let me out of here. Let me out of here. Like, listen, a gerbil or a hamster can only kind of, you know, it can move around at least. But a bird flies into a cage all day long and is on a little, basically like a stick, and gets to like peck at things a little bit. It never felt, and I also don't love birds that much. Like, I like seeing them in their element, but I don't love like birds landing on you, unless it was like a falcon, like when we interviewed the falconry and Danny Glover, the Verbal Shenanigans bird. But that's a big time inside joke. But so Uncle Bo was also he drove a convertible. He had a ponytail, but like picture like if Hulk Hogan, like a little less than Hulk Hogan, had a ponytail. So like really wrapping the sides into the ponytail, not much on the top going. You know, so it was kind of like pulled back. He had like, he had a tattoo, and like no one in my family had tattoos. So he kind of like had this like legendary status, like, oh, Uncle Bo's coming. Like, oh. And like me and Uncle Bo, like for some reason we had like a connection as like a kid. Like, and this doesn't end in like tragedy or anything. Like, he didn't do anything to me that I remember. But we, I remember he would just be like, oh, like Scott's a clown, you know? And I guess it, maybe he identified me because I was kind of goofy too. But I remember one, do you remember that song, I Can't Dance by Genesis? Phil Collins of Genesis?
Oh, yeah. Great song. Yeah. Great song.
For some reason, I have these memories of me and him doing that stupid walk from the video, but not for like a minute or two. Like doing it for like a half hour to like an hour straight around the house, where everyone's like, ah, like the first time. And then like our house was really small when we were growing, coming back down the hallway and like doing the Genesis dance for like a half hour. And Uncle Bo fully participating in it, like just completely immersed in the full Phil Collins dance. Now,
like you guys were doing the Phil Collins 5K, basically.
That, now there is an event we should sponsor. The first ever Verbal Shenanigans Phil Collins 5K.
The event will last 12 hours.
Yeah. And you got to have judges. If you break the Phil Collins, mode, you're out. You have to do that.
We're very serious about our I Can't Dance poses. No. It is literally one step takes about 12 seconds. Yeah. Okay.
Like, we've had the fastest backwards mile guy here on the podcast. Maybe one day we'll have the fastest Phil Collins marathoner. You know, Mike, you've been doing a lot of running over the last couple years. Maybe this is something you can train in.
I'm telling you, if we ever bring back Shenanigans Showdown, if you don't assign it to me, it's coming to you. Just keep that in mind. That will be assigned out the next time we ever try that game.
Mark that down. The Phil Collins 5K is brutal. Your quads have to just be ripping after, like, terrible pain after that. Oh, but anyway, so, like, now, as a guy in his I guess you can consider me close to my late 30s now, I realized that Uncle Bo was probably at a 2.0 like blood alcohol level at that point. Like, mm-hmm. no one's dancing with a kid for that long sober. Like, like the other day I go over to my brother's house and they, like, my niece and nephew love me. But after 15 minutes of rumbling around and playing with them, I'm like, oh man, I gotta sit down and, like, you know, guys, leave me alone for a second. Like, you know,
yeah.
like I play with my 4 month old for a long time and I gotta take a break. So Uncle Bo went on over the years. My grandfather had died. Uncle Bo became kind of like a depressed guy, and we would kind of lose track of him for years. You know, like, he'd be down in Florida. Nobody knows what's going on with Uncle Bo. He had like 4 or 5 daughters. He didn't talk to any of them, which is absolute tragedy. So the reason this where the story starts to take a turn or starts to get interesting, years later, when I'm about 22 years old, I started to date my ex, okay? And my ex, one day we're having a conversation, and I'm like, yeah, we got on Uncle Bo. I'm like, I had this crazy Uncle Bo that lived in the Poconos or whatever. And she's like, oh, yeah, no, like, my family has a trailer in the Poconos too. It's funny, we know a Bo Brennan. I'm like, okay, how many? First thing that goes in your head is, how many Bo Brennans are there? Like, there's a lot of Brennans, but Bo Brennan kind of narrows that down a little bit.
I mean, in the Wilkes-Barre Mountains, I could totally see about at least 6. Now, are you talking about Bo Brennan closer to Scranton? Or maybe Youngstown Bo Brennan you talking about?
Are you talking about young Bo or old Bo? Like, which, you know, there's probably a lot of generations of Bo's over there.
Or are you talking about the dog we call Bo Brennan? Oh, he's a scrappy one, that little Bo. Get on over here, Penny.
And it's funny, because Bo Brennan the dog doesn't even belong to the Brennan family. We just named him Bo Brennan. We gave him a last name, too.
Never even met a Brennan, and we named him that. Weirdest thing. Welcome to Scranton.
So as we're having this conversation, it was kind of like, oh, he has a ponytail, he drinks a lot, drives a convertible. And she's like, I had an Uncle Bo, right? We call Uncle Bo, that also had a convertible and a ponytail and a whatever. Things start, you know, narrowing down where we realize we're talking to the exact same person. Now, of all the people in this universe, okay, she had a trailer in the Poconos, like a camper, went to every weekend with her family, and was living right next to him. Okay. So this kind of blew my mind, because, like I told you, we kind of lost track of Uncle Bo over the years, and we're kind of like, yeah, we keep in touch. We see him once every 2 years or something like that, you know? And she's like, yeah, we're going to go up to the camper. Do you want to come? I'm like, yeah. So I go up to the camper a bunch of times, and I, like, reconnect with Uncle Bo. Like, here I am in my 20s, like, partying and hanging out with Uncle Bo years after he kind of, like, left the family. It's this weird reconnection. And, like, he still had this, like, young drunk spirit, I guess you can call it. But it was weird because he had, like, a lot of, like, young people hanging around. Like, and when I say that, I don't mean, like, kids, but, like, people in their 20s, people in their early 30s, like, random people. Like, he was always, like, having parties at his camper.
Now, did he recognize you immediately?
Oh, yeah.
Did he? Oh, yeah. Was he, like, next door and his eyes lit up and he started Phil Collins walking over to you?
Like, we reconnected. Like, I mean, ding, ding, ding. I can't dance.
We're going to hug my uncle in 30 minutes. I'll be right back.
I'll see you in a little bit. So this relationship started again where I was going up there maybe like once a month. You know, going up there, hanging with him. But Uncle Bo was, like, still that same Uncle Bo. And when you drink that hard for that many years, it starts to take a toll on you, you know? And mm-hmm. he would get bombed and get emotional and talk about his family and this and that. And he would get so boozed up, he'd be like, Scotty, make me a drink, make me a drink. And he would have those coffee, you know those coffee things? You see them at like conference rooms where you press the top and the coffee comes out the bottom or whatever. I don't know what they're, carafes of some sort. And he would fill that with vodka and a little bit of Fanta. That was his drink, vodka and Fanta.
What flavor of Fanta, for the record?
Like the lemon lime, kind of like the Sprite one.
I think orange would work better, but continue.
And he would fill it up and he'd run, you know, he'd be sitting there like pumping the thing and the air would come out. Oh, I need another one. And he'd be so bombed that what I would do, I would just take his glass and fill it with Fanta and then stick my finger in vodka and just rub it around the edge of the glass so that he really wasn't getting a drink. He was just and he would be like, oh, man, what a good drink. Oh, only a Brennan can make that drink. You know, I'm like, yeah, Uncle Bo. And his knees were so shot from, like, he was like a lifter back in the day. And I think driving the truck and everything, his knees were shot. So he like couldn't get up. I would wake him up the next morning and he would have a giant like piss bucket next to his bed. And he'd be like, oh, just ignore the bucket and things like that. Another story about Uncle Bo, when I was at my sister's sweet 16, he came, and he's like, it was at a Knights of Columbus or whatever, and he's like, Scott, I need you to drive me home to your dad's house. I'm like, okay. And he's like, hold on. He goes, and he orders two rum and cokes from the bar in glasses, mm-hmm. and he's like, all right, now we can go home. And he makes me drive him home as he's just having... like straight barware rum and coke, like in it, not no solo cup, no like hidden coffee cup, like with the red straw and the ice and the lime in it. You know what I mean?
No, officer. I was driving home and I said, I want Diet Coke, but I want fancy. So that's when I got the nice lime slice in there. And, you know, it looks so fancy. I'm like, oh, my left hand's going to look awfully empty if there ain't something in there. You know what I mean?
I always have glassware in my car. I'm a neat freak. I don't like garbage. Yeah. I'm very much about the environment.
Yeah. Classic is horrible on our wastelands. We got to protect them. That's why I do this. And all. This is the paper straw I got right here.
So... this relationship happens where I'm seeing him a lot, and he talks to me about every family thing, all these demons he has, every time he has a couple drinks. So my ex and I, obviously we break up, we separate, and I don't see Uncle Bo for years and years and years. And like my dad and his sisters and his brother, you know, that was their only remaining like... member of their dad's family. You know, their dad died, his brothers died. So another year or two goes by, and somehow, like, my aunt was reaching out to see if Uncle Bo was around, and they call, and some woman answers and is like, oh, Uncle Bo's dead. And they're like, oh, my God. Like, it's terrible. Now, Uncle Bo died, and he had, like... all this custom furniture and everything and, like, you know, things that maybe, like, left to his family. Apparently just some random woman who maybe he met up there got complete control of all his assets. Nobody knows where Uncle Bo was buried. Nobody knows what happened to his body. No one knows. There was no funeral, no wake, no closure. For all I know, Uncle Bo could be alive right now. I have no idea.
Oh, man. That's a little bit how, like, my Uncle Jimmy went. I probably brought it up on the cast before, but in the end, he, like, when he moved out, he was gay and one-legged, then he was gay and no-legged, then he was...
It'd be weird if he was straight and two-legged at the end.
Yeah, we don't know how he did that. God works in mysterious ways, but then he was religious... So he said he was cured slash straight or whatever. Oh, God. And then, we would see him in New Brunswick, and, like, he would just be, like, on the streets, like, rolling around in his wheelchair.
Isn't that terrible, like, the pressure he had from society like that and from religion? Like, all his whole life was probably, like, hiding that or getting shame for that, you know? And, like, it makes you different. If there was, like, a different society or a different, like, opinion about that, he probably would have been, you know, had a whole different life.
Yeah, we don't know. Like, none of us in the family, like, my family grew up, we never had anything bad to say. We never even had, like, discussions or that, like, turn in the 80s or anything like that. Like, we were pretty open. You are what you are. So we were kind of weird at, like, when he sent us a letter, it's like, oh, I found God and I'm straight. We're kind of like,
Michael Pence's Pray the Gay Away camp? You know,
we don't know. But then I think probably about 6 months later, like, I don't even know how somebody contacted us, but they told my mom he passed away, and then they went to his apartment, and it was just, he wasn't the cleanest guy. So it was just like, my dad said, literally, there were 100 jars of pee in that apartment, God, all around. And he's like, he opened that door, and he didn't know how he didn't just, like,
I think that's like
right there.
I think that's like one of the keys in life. And one of my favorite movies, I don't know if you've seen it, is Into the Wild, with Emil Hirsch, which I always thought he would have a massive career after that, with his performance after that. And he's been in a lot of big movies, but like, the whole moral of that movie is he goes on this trip, basically, like, tramping around, you know, like, hitchhiking and going into the wild and doing his own thing and living and escaping his parents and society and everything. And basically the whole thing at the end is, like, he eventually dies, and the moral of this, he does all these amazing things, but he ended up doing them alone. And, like, the whole thing is, like, you know, being alone is probably the worst, you know, the worst end of life kind of thing, being completely alone. Now, I'm not talking like your spouse dies before you alone. I'm talking like being alone your whole life and experiencing things that have no one to share it with. That's got to be
having,
like,
any, like, real social life for an entire life.
Yeah, no partner, no friends, no family. And, like, that's kind of the whole thing of that movie. But, so yeah, that's my Uncle Bo. So the mystery is still out there. Uncle Bo was a good guy, but he was a challenged man. He definitely had life's challenges and wasn't the best. And he definitely he liked to drink a lot. But Berlo, it is.
Before we get to the guest, though, I feel we have to give a name to his drink, and I thought about it for a bit.
Yep.
You remember the cartoon movie Anastasia?
Yes.
We should call his drink Fantasasia.
Yes. Even though it's like the most simple drink, it's just soda and vodka.
Like, that needs a name.
And all right. I'm in with that, as long as you have to get it served at one of those coffee carafes. Like,
absolutely.
You can't just get it at a bar. You have to go pump it into your own glass.
Easily, yeah. You got to keep it on the low class, like maybe like those, you remember like those fruit juice containers, like it would constantly like swirl up,
right?
And you put a cup in, it would shoot it out, something like that.
I agree.
Keep it classy.
All right, we could drink some Bo Brennan's one night while we're doing this podcast.
We get 5 Fantastasias in us, we can easily do the Phil Collins 5K. I guarantee it.
Well, we didn't mention that. That's part of the Phil Collins 5K. You have to get your blood checked before you start. It has to be at a 1.5 and above.
If you're able to drive, you are automatically eliminated from our competition. You cannot go in that competition being able to walk a straight line. You have to Phil Collins a line. That's it.
So rest in peace, Uncle Bo. I'm sure I got some more stories about you somewhere. But all right, so this is a pivotal moment here in the podcast. some backstory a couple years ago, which is not even a couple anymore, Mike. We looking back, it turns out it's like six and a half years ago. We started really talking about getting guests and if we ever could, who could we have on? Now, we have checked off a million boxes on that over the years. We have checked off the Dukes of Hazzard with both of them, which was like two of my favorite episodes, just for the pure surprise of having them delivered on you. We have talked to bands that I have loved growing up. We have talked to artists from bands that played at Woodstock and the musicians. And the list goes on and on and on. This is not a bragging session. But we one time made like a who's your Mount Rushmore of guests to get on. One of them was Sean Kemp. And I did talk to him for about 10, 15 minutes on the phone. And he never showed up for the interview. Long story short, like three times. But one of them was Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. One of them was Edward Norton from, you know, Fight Club and every, you know, all his other movies, American History X. And one of them was Sam Calagione from Dogfish Head Brewery. Because at a time in my life, I was so into brewing. I was really like into craft beer. I loved what Dogfish was doing. And today we were after about a 6-year chase, I guess, if you not even a chase, but just checking in and following up and getting them on. We were able to get Sam on the podcast. And so like it's a really meaningful episode to us. It was such a great interview. And we just had a great time. So after this 6-year wait and kind of things culminating, we're very, very happy and very, very proud to bring you our interview with Sam Calagione.
Hi, guys.
Sam, what is going on?
Hey, Sam.
This is Scott.
That's Mike over there. And that's Megan, in case you didn't know.
You know Megan.
Yeah.
Good to see you all today.
Sam, first off, thank you for giving us a few minutes, and it's really it's an honor to talk to you. I think me and Mike have been trying to track you down for about 6 years, so this is like the culmination of like a lot of effort to find
finally
you.
Finally drinking together.
Correct.
Well, so please don't be boring.
Yeah.
if you don't mind.
That's my goal, not be boring.
So I guess that the best way to start is, you know, Megan sent us this Hazy O that I see
your beer next to your bear behind you.
I got the beer, the milk that was sent, and the beer. So I was wondering it was funny, I was watching your Instagram video a couple months ago or a month ago with the new releases, and I was hoping that we were going to be talking about Hazy O. Because when I was brewing, I was obsessed with like trying oats and things and baking oatmeal in my oven. And a lot of it didn't come out great, but, I'm very curious what is Hazy O, when is it coming and what can beer fans expect from it? And I guess we should we pour the milk first or should we try the beer first?
Let's drink the beer.
All right.
And if you feel like having a side shooter of oat milk, knock yourself up.
Yeah, I didn't know if that's what they offered.
So I'll have a watermelon Rita.
Oh, jeez.
Interesting.
So tell us about Hazy O, Sam, before we even take this sip.
You know, when we opened, we were the smallest brewery in the country in 95, and I wrote into the business plan back then we would be the first commercial brewery in America, you know, committed to brewing the majority of our beers outside the Rheinheitsgebot boat using culinary ingredients. And it was true when we were the smallest brewery in the country, and it's true today as a top 20 craft brand. And so for us, we're always looking for inspiration, mostly from the culinary world. And I was at a indie coffee shop like 2 years ago, and the hipster barista was telling me I ordered like a cappuccino with almond milk.
Right.
He's like, dude, you gotta try this with oat milk. Oat milk's so smooth, so frothy, so silky. And that's what got me thinking, you know, we already 10 years ago, we brewed our first hazy or more than that with an unfiltered IPA called Squall using oats over a decade ago. So we've been fucking with oats for well over a decade, but oat milk, I was like, huh. And then I did a bunch of research and found this amazing company called Elmhurst in upstate New York, you know, family owned, and they have their own unique proprietary way of processing the oat milk, so they don't need any gums or emulsifiers. It's just, you know, water, oats, and salt are the only ingredients. So away we went and started screwing with the recipe, and we found that the oat milk just gives a super unique, when you drink this with me, I hope you'll see, you know, it has the tropical juicy hop notes, but then it's got this really unique soft silky mouthfeel that makes it drink like a 5 ABV session.
Yeah, I mean, I have it open in a glass right under my nose, and I'm getting tons of hops coming through it. So I'm excited for this first sip. So cheers, Sam. Thanks for doing this also.
Cheers, Michael. Cheers, Scott. Good to be here with you today. So let me know your impressions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely got that like real creamy kind of almost like a not as lactosey as some of the IPA that I've had. It's very smooth. And I can see this being really good on like a hot day doing yard work and or sitting by a fire or something like that. Well done.
Thank you. And it's got, you know, it's got your classic sort of juicy Northwest hops, but then we found another unique hop that throws almost like a coconutty, almost cedar and coconut note underneath the tropical expected hop notes. And what's interesting is the oat milk, not only does it give it that soft, silky mouthfeel, but it also kind of coats your mouth and as your whole like stomach really. And so you don't get that hop bite.
Yeah, it's very comforting. Yeah. Like I feel like I want to just zone in and sit around and just have a couple of these, which I probably will.
Michael, what are your thoughts?
I mean, you're on point on everything. I mean, very tropical taste. I mean, what you brought up is kind of true. Like I kind of, as I got into brews, weren't huge on IPAs just because get a ton of like bitter on the hops on the back end, but I in the back of the throat, I got that nice linger. I get the taste of the hops, but I'm not getting that overly bitter kind of thing where it just kind of takes away from tropical notes.
Yeah. So
it's very smooth. Very. Yeah. Bravo, sir.
This is
Bravo.
Great.
Thank you. Yeah.
So I think you should try more beers.
Yeah.
I really got to get into this brewing thing. You know?
So when does Hazio like come to the public? Like when?
It just started rolling out coast to coast. It'll be a national release for us. Just started getting into stores about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Trucks are still shipping, but look for it. We have this awesome function on our dogfish.com website called Fish Finder, and you can plug in your area code and find out stores close to wherever you live that bought Hazio recently. And the other thing we're really excited about for this beer is, even though oat milk itself is pretty expensive, we said, you know, we think this beer is so sessionable for a 7 ABV beer that we think it could be a lot of people's go-to hazy. So we wanted to, it's being priced at the same price as our 60 minute and our slightly made.
Oh, great.
So it's $9.99 six pack is what we're targeting. So really great bang for your buck when you think about a 7.1 ABV, you know, the first nationally oat milk infused IPA at that sort of national craft price. We think this could be a real big volume.
I agree, man. You know. This is right up my alley.
It's
funny that Megan sent us the beer and the milk, and I had just gone to Trader Joe's and filled our – and my wife comes marching through the door home from work, and she's like, "Oh, you bought oat milk," and starts shaking. I'm like, no, that's for the – she's going to pour herself a fat glass of it. I'm like, "You got to wait.
After today. And so that's the other thing when you think about oat milk. You know, so hazy IPAs, fastest growing beer style in America, grew almost 100% last year. Seltzers is the fastest growing alcohol style that grew almost 200% last year. Oat milk in 2020 grew 215%.
Wow.
So Hazio is really the first beer that sits in that perfect sweet spot between the hazy trend and the sort of better for you oat milk trend, and kind of both are exploding. So we think exponentially we're on to something here that'll resonate with a lot of people.
That's awesome. So Sam, I got some questions for you.
Sure.
You know, when you sit back and you think about the success and size and reach of Dogfish and the growth, is there still a part of you today that like misses that real humble beginning, like grinding stage of those early years? And like, how has your daily grind changed from then to now? Like, what is a day in the life of Sam like?
Well, you know, what's awesome is it really hasn't changed that much. I was sitting down drinking experimental Pilsners with five of my Boston Beer brewer coworkers at 9:30 this morning after hosting a beer dinner virtually for my New Jersey distributors last night. So, you know, we say at Dogfish, you know, we never let the tail of money wag the dog of inspiration. So right. Certainly we've got more resources to be experimental. We have a 10-gallon brewery, a 5-barrel brewery, a 7-barrel brewery that we can just throw shit at the wall of Jackson Pollock style while our big systems are pumping out our Warhols and our Monets. But, you know, Steve, Michael, I'm looking at your hat, and that's a Tim Burton, I think, hat. Mm-hmm. You think of someone that's as artistic and adventurous as Tim Burton, and yet he plays within the big studios,
right,
to get his movies out coast to coast, but it doesn't change his ability to follow his creative muse. And that's the same with us. You know, I'd be bummed out if I drove into Dogfish and our big 600 barrel fermenters in our front yard, if they were only filled with 60 minute, and right, I love 60 minute, I'd be like, we didn't live by our mission when we started this brewery. But the fact that those big giant tanks are filled with beers that have black limes in them, that have monk fruit in them, that have oat milk, that have oat milk in them, I'm like, holy shit, we've done this in a way that allowed us to stay true to ourselves, you know?
It's awesome. Mm.
Your whole story with wanting to change around things with beer, not be the traditional German kind of style, like, I've listened to some of your interviews where you talked about, like, in your original, like, kind of beer fest, the guys are coming up to you, oh, this is insulting, you're using this, you're using that. I'm kind of curious, did you see more people coming around as coming to the fest as more like you, or did they change around more? What kind of gave it a sense where it's like, okay, my vision's starting to be what craft beer is today?
Yeah, that's a great question. It was never like a tipping point. It was kind of like this slow, you know, movement where more and more craft brewers starting brewing outside the Rhein-Heitzgebot and embracing a broader definition of what ingredients could be. And even though it was like this slow boil, it was a great moment last week. You know, Dogfish Head's proud to be the sponsor brewery of the Extreme Beer Fest, and we had to do it virtually this year. So Todd Allstrom and I sat on a Zoom call for 5 hours, two nights in a row, and we invited all the brewers in that sent beers in these packages to everyone participating virtually. And it was so cool because like 99% of the beers were beers that had fruited sours or citrus barley wines. And it was just really heartwarming because, you know, I'm not a young dude anymore. I'm 51, but hear the stories of these 25-year-old brewers and that, you know, they were, a lot of them said really nice things about how we were a touchstone for them, you know, with our creative brewing. It really just warms my heart to see how many more brewers are equally on their own creative journey without boundaries on how beer should be defined by ingredients.
That's awesome. I might have a story for you that might either warm your heart or creep you out. Either one. But okay. I was doing a master's class. I was finishing up a master's in education, and we got to choose kind of our last assignment, last paper. And one of the things I did a paper on four creative people that kind of inspired me. Okay. Mm-hmm. And one of them was you. So I was talking about, you know, one of them was Edward Norton, the actor. One of them was Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And one of them was you. And the professor loved it so much so, in fact, that he's like, oh, I got to go try some of this Dogfish stuff after reading it. So it was pretty cool. So it is. It, like I said, this is kind of coming.
That's rarefied company that you put me in.
That's all right. That's all right.
And my sister got her master's in education at Smith. So you're doing God's work there.
Yeah.
You know,
some days. That's awesome. But I guess my question is, like, you've kind of been a creative person your whole life, whether it's writing or whatnot, from beer to marketing to you even recently opened an inn. How do you continue to keep that, I do comedy, and I always got to find myself doing something to keep that creative muscle strong, and pandemic has really hurt that. Trying to find a different way. How do you keep that creative muscle strong? Is it just beer, or are you still what is a process that you do to try to kind of stay creative? Because I feel like it's pretty important to you.
Yeah, that's an awesome question. I'd say the two biggest influences that kind of you know, float my creative boat would be making sure I have time every day to read. And I try not to read in our industry. I really don't read any business books or brewing books. I try to read in the art and music and sort of creative tangents related to beer, but not on the nose about beer. And then I try to take an hour every day to either usually paddleboard or row or be outside in nature doing some sort of physical activity, both so that I can earn my beer calories, but also that's also probably my most creative hour of the day. And I think I've chosen the sports of bicycling and paddleboarding because they're sports that when you have a creative idea, you can immediately whip out your phone, pull out your notes section. If you come up with a beer name or an idea for a recipe and write it down and keep going, you know, that said, I now have 5 iPhones in the harbor in Lewis that I've dropped off my paddleboard while I'm listening to music. I got a good idea. And then all of a sudden it's like, bloop, 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 bloop.
Someone's going to pick them up years from now and find all these these secret dogfish recipes.
Orange Pilsner, of course.
And like, they're like, oh, what do they call those things? Time capsules, like digital time capsules.
That's awesome.
Now, it's incredible, like all the research you did with, you know, ancient brews and everything that you've done experimenting. When somebody like comes and like interviews for you to kind of like work at the brewery, what would it take for somebody to like really impress you where you go, whoa, that's not like a normal person, as in like somebody you're really interested in?
Yeah. Well, I'd say that's where I lean on how proud that I am that, you know, Dogfish Head success is really the success of the entire community of coworkers. And when we're hiring someone, one of the things that we've traditionally done is when someone comes in to interview, they don't just interview with the people in the department they're going to work in. There's time that they spend hanging with people outside that department just to learn about the company culture from, you know, other touch points that might not be their day to day. And then the feedback from those people, it's equally important. Does that person feel like, is it someone we want to hang out and drink beers with, or, you know, not just their resume. And there's even what we called a liquid true serum component to the interview, where at night, we, after a day of interviews, we take them out drinking, and then we see if we want to hang out with them after they had a few drinks. So the liquid true serum component of the interview is just as important as the...
So many of my friends would fail that part of the interview, man.
There have been so many times where the fucking train came off the track and we're like texting from a bathroom, like, get me, you know, out of this situation. This person's a nightmare after they had 5 years. But thankfully, most of the people that make it through that gauntlet, they stay with our company a long time because we are so discerning on those hires that they have to be both a great cultural fit, someone you want to hang and drink beers with, and good at whatever their job is on paper.
Was it hard for you to, like, you know, you kind of went from a one-man band kind of entrepreneur to, you know, building a very large... Was it hard for you to kind of hand over the reins at some point, like... in the brewing process and all the marketing and all that? Was it hard to kind of let that go?
Yeah, probably if you talk to a bunch of my coworkers, they say I haven't done a great job of letting parts of that go. But there are part, I do know like what things I am passionate about and B, bring value to our company. And thankfully, I think they're pretty much overlap, which would be the creative side, coming up with recipes, coming up with ideas for events or collaborations or a new t-shirt design or partnership. So that's where my love is. And I always proudly, if I get to travel abroad again someday, one of my favorite moments is when I come back into our country, is when you have to sign those forms and it asks what you do. And I always proudly write down that I'm a brewer, and I consider myself a brewer first and a business person second.
Right.
And I think that really informs what I've been fortunate enough to evolve my job into, focusing on the areas that I'm not only good at, but that bring me joy, because I suck at like accounting and finance and HR and that kind of stuff. And thankfully there's awesome people at our company with complementary superpowers in the areas that I don't have any.
I've listened to your TED Talk video, and I bring this up every time we have a brewer on here. It's always fascinating to me, the craft brewery community. It seems like everybody's together. I never hear about like a war between two breweries. It's everybody's like, man, I want to work with you, let's make something and all that. Yeah. But it seems like every other business, you never hear like two restaurants, hey, let's come together, let's make like a nacho plate that's never been done before. Right. Like, right. Why do you feel that always is and all? Because it's just, like I said, it just amazes me how much love is in that business and there's how much competitiveness in every other business.
No, you're totally right. And it's always been that way, you know, from when, you know, from when Ken Grossman, who founded Sierra, tells a story of him going to visit Fritz Maytag, who opened Anchor Steam a few years before him, and that Fritz opened his door and toured around the brewery. And every growing brewery has like a boneyard, like a scrapyard of shit they outgrew or equipment they don't use anymore. Right. And there's even that informal thing where Ken got to go through his boneyard, found some piping and shit that he sold him like at scrap value to open Sierra Nevada. And I think that it just established itself as a mutually supportive, altruistic community from the days of those pioneers. And I think part of that comes from the fact that we're still David's among Goliaths. So collectively, all the American-owned indie craft breweries that fit the Brewers Association's definition of an indie craft brewery, so that'd be us, Boston Beer, Yingling, Sierra, New Belgium. Well, I guess New Belgium's not in that definition anymore, but Sierra, you know, down to the local, you know, the other halves, the Tired Hands, all of us collectively have like 15.5% market share. So we're still a David up against Goliath, even though craft beer is a lot more available than when, you know, Dogfish opened 26 years ago.
All right, Sam, I want to hit you with some rapid fire questions.
Do it.
Don't even think about them. Just answer. Okay.
That's how I've lived my whole life.
All right. Worst failed beer experiment ever made at Dogfish.
I'd have to say High Alpha Wit. It was a wheat beer made with peppercorns and lavender buds. And we used to do these comment cards. So consumers would give us feedback. And the first comment card said, this beer tastes like tongue-kissing Laura Ashley.
Wow.
Yeah, I used too much lavender buds.
See, I always said, I've been telling Scott this, like, I'm not a brewer. I would always like a cantaloupe with like a back end, like of a peppercorn where you get like real sweet. And then you get that little tingle at the back of the throat at the end.
Ooh,
put in your notes. Name good. It after me.
Our namaste. The show. So our yoga theme, like our original active lifestyle beer that we still make in the Mid-Atlantic is called Namaste. And it's a Belgian white that has, to your point, has the sweetness of real orange juice up front. But then we do add some peppercorns to it in the back to dry it out. So you're on to something, Michael.
All right.
You're known for a lot of music collaborations, a lot of different music artists from the, you know, Grateful Dead, different things like that. Pearl Jam beer, I remember years ago. Yeah. What would be your dream band to collaborate with? And what would a Nickelback ale taste like?
Oh, Nickelback would taste, I think, like licking nickels. So I got great respect for their creative journey, but it's not my journey. I do respect that band. But then if I had my druthers and could collaborate with anyone, honestly, I'm probably dating myself, but it'd probably be Bob Dylan. I mean, imagine trying to create a recipe with a Nobel laureate that also did so much, you know, in his world and touched so many genres of music and collaborated with so many other amazing artists. I think that'd be an awesome day of learning from essentially the Yoda of the living creative world, you know?
Yeah. Sam's all-time favorite Dogfish beer.
So that'd be Sequench. There's never been a beer in our 26-year journey that I've drank as a bigger volume of. And that's saying a lot because we only released it half a decade ago.
I was just going to say, it's relatively new.
You know, so 60 Minutes, certainly number two in volume consumption for me through my life. But Sequench, it just hits all my buttons. And, you know, everyone's palate is different. But for me, that sea salt, the lime, the refreshingness of it is exactly what I love about beer.
Was there ever another name in mind for the brewery?
Oh, that's a great question. What the hell else?
Like, no, we've had a bunch of rappers on the podcast, and that's my favorite question to ask them. Like,
the band names?
Like, what other rap names they have? And they're all terrible until they come up with, like, the one that sticks.
Didn't Childish Gambino use the Wu-Tang name generator to come up with his name?
Is that true?
I didn't hear that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I hope your listeners get to Google search. I think it's still up somewhere, the Wu-Tang name generator, because it's a lot of fun to check that out.
All right, last one. Every brewer we talk to or, you know, associated with generally looks like me. They got a beard and some kind of flannel shirt. Never never seen you rock a beard in all these years. Never seen even a picture of you. What? How'd you not succumb to the beard pressure?
My wife's across the room at her desk laughing at me now. Because 1 year, just for to show my support, I did Movember.
Right.
And I looked pretty fucking creepy. I kind of looked like the idiot brother of Bob from Bob's Burger. Wasn't a flattering.
Fair enough.
But with everything you have done with the brewery, the inn, the distillery, like one amazing thing when this whole outbreak came out, you teamed up with the state of Delaware to create sanitizer and bottled up to them. I'm kind of curious how long of a process that was from getting the idea to finally going, here you go, let's help out.
Oh, super fast. And, you know, James Montero, who runs our distillery, deserves a lot of credit there. But, you know, thankfully with hand sanitizer, the main ingredient is ethanol, which is also the main ingredient that's in vodka.
Right.
So it didn't take us a ton. We, you know, had to add some auxiliary ingredients to quickly, you know, pivot and, convert our distillery into making sanitizer. But it was a super heartwarming, you know, it just felt so good in that stressful moment of the early days of COVID. It's like, first you're like, all right, am I safe? Is my family safe? And then is my community safe? And that we had this capability that was unique because of the business we were in, it was kismet that we had the materials to keep our community safe to some degree. And we also really felt icky about making that a commercial, you know, opportunity for us. So the profits from the sales to the state, which is our biggest customer, we created a fund with the Delaware Restaurant Association so that those profits went to the out of work hospitality workers in our state.
That's awesome. So I got a couple questions from people. They kind of, a bunch of them asked me the same thing when I was telling them we were interviewing you. So you had Brewmasters on Discovery Channel for a while. Loved the show. A lot of people love the show. So the rumor was that it got canceled due to people, the big companies pulling their advertising. Is that true? And part B, did you ever think about kind of revamping it and doing it independently?
Yeah. So I will say without naming any names, yes, like the show was had just a week before it launched, the execs at Discovery came to me and said, we're going to have this major brewing company be the main advertiser on your show, and they're going to create ads that kind of look like the show. And I was like, I can't stop you from doing that. I know it's during the commercial block, but you know, folks ask us about it on social media, we'll say how we feel about it. So we did that. And then the big brewery didn't appreciate that. And they threatened to pull their money. So we just said, hey, we had a lot of fun with the great respect for the folks at Discovery. But after one season, we're like, this doesn't feel right now. That said, you know, yes, we make our own. We love still making short films. You can go to Dogfish Head's YouTube channel. We had some fun doing some short shows with our friends at Complex, the same folks that do Hot Ones. So you never know if you got folks turning in that do programming for shows, we'd love to chat with them.
Awesome.
It kind of leads to one of my questions, which is like, with being so passionate about what you create and putting in all the time and getting the right people, when somebody comes into your brewery and they're like, well, what here tastes like Budweiser? That's what I like. Do you almost like cringe, like, oh, nothing, please. The door's that way.
No. Like I said, the same way that within the craft brewing community, the brewers have, you know, collaborate and are respectful to each other. The community really does extend to the consumers and the beer lovers that are out there. And I think we collectively have an obligation to be welcoming, not elitist. And so that's why, you know, beer, you know, Dogfish does beers like Slightly Mighty. We intentionally made that beer to be the exact same calories as Mick Ultra, be slight in calories, but be mighty in hop character. Because when people are scared about craft beer, oh, that's really heavy. Oh, that's really strong. If we can give them a 4% ABV beer, that's the exact same calories and carbs essentially as Mick Ultra, but it has a beautiful hop bouquet, that can be a baby step for them off of sort of light lager, terra firma, and onto the flavor bridge of craft beer. And once they get on that bridge, it's very rare that someone walks back to terra firma.
That's true. I could think of, you know, dozens of my Bud Light, Miller Light drinking friends that you know, I've converted over the years.
Thank you.
But
you're doing God's work in two respects.
you have a new book coming out. I'm not sure if it's next month or the month after, but whatever. I know you had Brewing Up a Business. Read that.
Yep.
Actually, I think I went down to your brewery when you were releasing. I don't know. Whatever. But
thank you.
And so you, for those people who don't know or listening, you actually opened up a Dogfish Inn. So tell us a little bit about the book, because I know that it's involved in that too. And Tell us a little bit about the Dogfish Inn, what that's all about.
Sure. So the book's coming out from our publisher Wiley this spring. It's just called the Dogfish Head Book, and we modeled it in name and actually design after the Beastie Boys book, which is very sort of design centric and photo heavy. And the tone of the kind of writing in the book, we intentionally did it myself, my wife Mariah, who's my co-author, and my coworker Andrew Greeley, who's my coworker. He runs the hotel, and at our Harborfront Hotel in Lewis, Delaware, we have this cowboy cauldron in the backyard, which is just this pimped out suite, like outdoor cowboy fire pit. And if I'm home in coastal Delaware on the weekend, Saturday night, we do what's called fireside chat, and we invite the 17 room guests to come hang out by the fire pit, drink beers. And the only rules are we talk about beer. It doesn't just have to be about Dogfish. It can be anything about the world of beer. And those are some of my favorite informal fun meetings over beers with passionate, you know, fans of beer and fans of Dogfish. So we used that model for the book, where we wanted it to feel like a fireside chat. In fact, I got to say, I was drinking while I wrote most of the book.
Thank God for editors.
I would sit at night and have a recorder and tell the story of like 90-minute IPA, the history of it, while drinking a 90, or I'd think about the story of Slightly Muddy while drinking Slightly. So I hope that sort of welcoming fireside chat informal tone comes through in the book, as well as the beautiful design work that our designers did on the book.
That's awesome. When's it come out again?
Oh, we think it'll probably come out in April-ish.
Okay, so soon.
I don't think we got the hard pub date yet, but we've delivered all the assets, and now it's just being, you know, put into the format to go to the printer.
That's awesome.
Now, Norm, we're coming near the end of our interview, and we really appreciate talking to you. Normally, I am with like a kind of corny, funny question, but
mostly corny. Mostly corny.
Yeah, but this is going to sound weird and bad, but it's actually kind of funny. I want to kind of tell you how at first my wife thought I was interviewing you as an insurrectionist, which
really?
Yes, because doing the research, I played a video where you talked about the very beginning, where you open your restaurant with the brewery, and some guy just came by, and he's like, you know, you can't open a brewery here in Delaware.
Right.
And you tell the story, you're like, all right, I'm going right down to the Capitol, and I'm asking, where's the House, where's the Senate? And she's hearing this, and she's like, oh my God, you're talking to one of them? I'm like, no, this guy's cool. It's an amazing story. You know, she's like, he's asking where the House and the Senate is. What is wrong with these people?
I never thought of it through that lens. I was before my time.
But I told her, don't worry. He's a dude with the face paint and the buffalo ears. He's really cool.
Yeah. I'll say the major point of differentiation is I did not try to force myself into people. And I came bearing samples of homebrew, not torches, as I went into those buildings.
you're considered one of the pioneers of the craft beer movement in America. Okay. You know, seeing as the other day I saw on Instagram, there was a beer with ranch dressing and a beer with pizza in it and a beer with Doritos. Would you like to take this time to apologize?
while you might not see that from us, we're glad that other people are pushing the envelope.
You did put lobster in one. I had that.
We did. Yep. Chuck Lobster won an award at the Great American Beer Fest, the biggest beer award competition in the country. Chuck Lobster is an award winning.
You know, Frankenstein wasn't the monster. It was the doctor, you know. So
that's profound. That is profound, Scott. I'm going to stew on that one.
in all seriousness, Sam, thank you so much for your time, man. This really was an honor to finally get to talk to you and sit down with you. Thank Megan for taking care of this. She deserves a promotion, whatever
doing. She's good at her job. Yeah. I'm glad you guys like. So did you both? You both dug the Hazy?
I love it. I'm going to go have the second one now.
Seriously. Yeah.
We're super proud of this beer. And like I said, go to dogfish.com to your listeners. Go to the Fish Finder, and you can find where the AZO is most recently delivered to a fine establishment near you.
That's awesome. I guess my last question, Sam, it's a two-part question. What's on the horizon for Dogfish? And then two, if you weren't doing this, if brewing never found you, where would you see yourself? What would you see yourself doing?
So, well, I probably would have followed a path, you know, like yours. It was kind of my dream to be an educator, an English teacher, like a high school English teacher was probably the other goal that I one time had. But I kind of, as I got going with the brewing thing, I just became, you know, my raison d'etre. And I love the opportunity. I get to still write stories and tell stories, but through the lens of the creations. And then which takes me to the other part of your question of what's on the horizon. One that we've been writing the story for 20 years is our canned cocktails, which we're launching about a month from now.
Nice.
But we were one of the original craft distilleries in America. We opened our distillery about almost exactly 20 years ago, and we've been fucking with canned cocktails in our own properties for two decades. So we're really excited that we're taking all of that same culinary approach and unexpected combinations of ingredients and flavors that we've always brought to beer into the canned cocktail universe. So more to come on that in about a month.
That's awesome. Sam, thank you so much. Stay safe out there, and please keep doing what you're doing, because it's great.
Thank you, Scott and Michael. You guys are fun to hang out with. I look forward to my next beer with you guys.
All right, Mike, the one and only Sam Calagione from Dogfish Head Brewery.
How are you feeling, Scott?
I'm feeling good. I feel
like a 7-year journey finally to fruition.
No, it's great, man. And you know, you could tell he's just a genuine dude, and seemed to enjoy the interview. So it was really awesome to kind of put that together. And I know a lot of people in the craft beer world will be, hopefully be pumped to hear this episode. So, I guess on to the next hunt. Mike's going to announce that we finally got Art Garfunkel on the podcast next week.
I guess before we continue, we should also give a shout out to Megan from Dogfish, who has been super nice to
unbelievable.
Us throughout these years, as we've been asking. I mean, a lot of these times when we go out to people, kind of give you a little insight to the joke that Scott says, like some people we have gone out to, such as randomly, I said, it'd be kind of cool if we get Art Garfunkel on here.
Yep.
And I went to his like publicist person. He's like, absolutely not. He barely does media. You don't have a prayer, kind of. And then, but I still like to poke him every once in a while.
Absolutely.
Like, hey, I see Art's doing like a tour thing and maybe do some media. No, he will not have time for you. Hey, it's, you know, getting near the Christmas time and all. Art
we like off? We like to beat people into submission sometimes. And there's been some guests that we have followed through, and we eventually got them on. And in fact, some people have said that's why we got them on, was our persistence. But you're right. Another one that I keep reaching out to is one of the people from Shark Tank, that Barbara Corcoran. I email her person like every 6 weeks or so. Hey, just checking in. Bauer's really full right now. Check in again in the spring. You know, but you're right. Megan has never, like, I've got a couple responses from her. You got a couple responses, and Dogfish in general, because I think there was people even before that.
Yeah.
They always said, sounds really cool, just not available at this time. Check in down the line. So thank you, Megan, for making this happen, and it was well worth it. So so I guess they hire good people at Dogfish, is what I'm saying. So
yeah, definitely. And all seriousness, check out their brewery. It's super awesome. They got this metal kind of It's like a treehouse.
Yeah, like a steampunk inspired treehouse in the front. Yep.
Yep. And they always give like an awesome tour, like where they show the main building or they're doing the brewing. Then they show you the distribution. Always, I've been there two or three times.
It's great.
Great time every single time.
Yeah. And it was funny because last year for my anniversary, I was planning on like me and the wife going down for like a weekend to the Dogfish Inn. And like, I thought it would have been a good hangout and stuff. And then COVID happened and we didn't do anything. And she was also like pretty damn pregnant at the time. So, but it's now in the plans. Hopefully, maybe not this April, but sometime in the summer, hopefully, when things maybe finally get back to normal. But thank you, Sam. Thank you, Megan. One of our favorite episodes to date.
But no thank yous to Art Garfunkel yet. We will thank you after the interview when it happens.
He'll thank us. He will thank us.
Yeah. He'll be like, you know what? That whole Simon and Me thing, that was nothing. And I wish it was more Shenanigans and Garfunkel. I got to be honest with you. I feel that's how he would end the interview.
So we've been doing this for a long time. And I figured since we had we checked off one of our boxes, man. We checked off one of our guests that we wanted to get on. I figured I'd bring back a classic, Mike. I got to bring back something we've done for years and years and years from time to time. Mike, it's time for some bear news.
Bear news! We're talking about bear and shit. We're talking about bear and shit. It's freaking bear news! Bears in the world doing all sorts of things. Yeah, girl! You know I like them bears and shit.
So for those of you who don't, okay, you heard our cool theme song there.
If you edit it in.
If I remember to edit it in, correct. That's happened a few times. I don't know what started as like just a dumb, silly conversation about bears and how much I love bears turned into like a whole bear episode. And then we kind of check in on the latest bear news in the world. Bear attacks. We've had stuff about the Chicago Bears. We've had a lot of different. We had Christmas episodes where we talked about bear news. So, Mike, I'm going to give you three stories here, and it's shocking to know that there's still bear news that is, still relevant other than just an attack here and there. Okay. So, Mike, I will give you the pick. Would you like to go with number one, two, or three?
Well, back in my Let's Make a Deal days, I was always a person who pointed to curtain number three. I always had a good feeling about that.
So all right, Mike. This is a good one. This just happened. We're recording this. So this happened about 4 days ago.
Okay.
Bear bites woman's bottom during bizarre outhouse encounter. Shannon Stevens of Haines.
I don't see what's bizarre, but you can give it a shot.
Yeah, this happens to you frequently, right? Shannon Stevens of Haines, Alaska might be the only person that had been bitten in the rear by a bear while attempting to use a campsite outhouse. She might be the only person this ever happened to. Carl Koch, a spokesman of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, told KHNS News, "I wouldn't be surprised over the years if other folks have had bizarre things, but during February, to sit down in an outhouse and have something like that happen is very unusual." Stevens was yurt camping at Chilkak Lake on Saturday with her brother and his girlfriend when it was time to go to the bathroom. Normally, when we're out there in the summer or the fall, I'm used to shouting, "Hey, bear," the whole way. So I guess it's pretty common, bears up in this Alaska. It was the dead of winter, so I didn't think to do it this time. I got in there, sat down on the toilet seat, and something just immediately bit me in the butt. I jumped up and screamed. Eric Stevens rushed to the aid of her sister after hearing her explanation, went into the outhouse with a headlamp. He looked into the toilet to see a gigantic bear face looking right back at me. He slammed the lid, and they hurried back to the yurt, where Shannon, who was bleeding but not seriously injured, was treated for a deep puncture wound. She later wondered whether the injury was from bear claws, but apparently he pushed some rocks out of the way and got down into the hole, which was underneath the outhouse, Mike.
First off, I didn't think they dug a hole in an outhouse so big that a bear could crawl into it.
Dude, this is Alaska. Everything's bigger there, you know? Bigger dumps, bigger holes.
I mean, you're digging that much, you might as well just put pipes in there. Come on.
Remember when you were a kid and you heard of, like, stories of, like, old New York where, like, rodents would come up the toilet, you know, and, like, bite you or things like that?
Snakes, it was a common story.
Imagine in New York City, bears just jumping through the pipes and, like a that's such a great B movie or a C movie. Like, you know, like, they had to transfer bears into the city because of some environmental hazard and they could live better in New York, but they escape and they start going up people's pipes in, like, these $25,000 a month, like, high-rise apartments, and all these celebrities are getting bit in the ass and while they go to the bathroom. I mean, there's a concept.
I need you to stop. I need you to take this out of the show because we are going to find whoever made Sharknado. And we're going to make a lot of money right now.
Yeah.
So you, when bear you can't give this out free to the public. I'm sorry.
When Bear Toilet 1 comes out, it's going to be a monster monster hit.
Who can we get to be, like, the lead on that?
Clearly, Tom Hanks.
Nah, we got to get cheesy on this. Who played the Russian in Rocky IV?
I'm going with Charlie Day.
No, but do you
remember? Oh, Dolph Lundgren.
You tell me he's starring in Bear Toilet 1 that ain't a smash hit.
And you know, we have to give it a 1, 2 from the start, just to let them know that there's Bear Toilet 2, 3, 4, 7, X, all of them coming down the line. Right away.
The jokes for number 2 would be insane, just to start.
God.
Like, there'd be no possibility there can't be a sequel.
You know what? You're right. Between the Phil Collins marathon, the Genesis marathon, 5K.
We got to start slow.
And then there'll be extreme athletes, you know, doing that. But, between that and the Bear Toilet 1, I think we might have to shut this cast down right now. We're not putting this out.
I don't know why we're spending our time. We finally get Sam on, and we just realize we have ideas where we should stop podcasting. It is really sad. It took us 7 years to come up with the idea.
See? I told you. I wrote a paper on Sam. He was an inspirational guy, and look at the inspiration we're getting today.
Absolutely. Another observation I had was when the guy saw the bear in the hole of the toilet, did he really think slamming the lid was going to slow down the bear in any way if it was going to attack him?
Let me ask you a question. Okay. Would you take, now knowing that you're a podcaster, maybe you'll do comedy again one day, maybe you need a career change, would you take that bear bite to the behind to own this story, to have this story for the rest of your life?
I gotta think so, because it's not going to be lethal. I mean, I don't really have a, like, my butt's not my best feature, so it's not like my wife is going to be like, well, I loved you until
Stop past. Selling yourself short, Mike. You got a great butt. Come on.
I'm just saying, if it had, like, maybe, like, the scar will look like a tattoo will add to my butt features.
That's what I'm saying. Would you take this bear bite to own this story? It's your story forever.
I got to think so, because that girl survived and she didn't know it was coming. If I sat back and said, okay, I got comedy gold coming so I can prepare myself for what's coming, I'd probably be in a better spot than this.
Like, this girl already knows that podcasts like us will be reaching out in the next couple weeks to try to find her to talk about this. You know?
I would advise her not to put that, like, on her Indeed, because we will find her that way. Mm-hmm. Well, how did you find me? Well, under references, you brought up the camping trip where you got your butt bit.
You referenced the toilet bear. It was a weird reference. It was a weird reference.
Yeah, we can't get a hold of him. The number you gave us, he's not picking up. Yeah, I don't know.
Mike, would you like to go with the second story of number one or two?
I like a little chaos in this world, so I ain't going in order. We're going to number one, Scott.
Oh, you monster. Okay.
I know.
All right, Mike. Probably a big star in Georgia, I would assume. I bet you she's really loved in Georgia. Dolly Parton once risked a bear attack to avoid a bad date.
Interesting. She's more Tennessee. That's where Dollywood is at.
But I figured down there's probably a good chunk of Dolly Parton. Yeah.
Oh, she's beloved. She's beloved anywhere. It's Dolly Parton.
That's true. Now. Didn't one of our guests recently talk about Dolly Parton? Someone talked about
it. Yeah, it was Leland. I think it was Leland.
Yeah, Leland.
He did songs with her, and he was in one of her movies.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that was one of our favorite episodes of the year, so please go check that
Leland out. Leland Sklar, for anybody looking up the episode. No.
So long before hoping that Jolene wouldn't take her man, Dolly Parton wished a bear or bobcat did take the young man she was on a date with when she was 18 years old. The country and pop icon played a game of true confessions with host Jimmy Fallon and guest Noah Centineo. I don't know who that is. Where each player had to guess whether confessions were true or false. I dated a guy and he kicked me out of the car and made me walk home through a forest with bears and bobcats, Parton said. Centineo replied, did you encounter bears and bobcats? She said, absolutely. I heard them. I felt them, she explained. I was put out or get out situation. She added that she was the only on the date because the boy had a car. Once telling Fallon and Centineo that the story was true, she shared the moral she learned from the story. I thought, if that ever happens to me again, I'm definitely giving it up. I'd rather be chewed up on by a boy than a bear.
Well, it's kind of weird. She lives through that story, but she makes a song like Jolene where she's begging her not to take her man and all. If you're strong enough to go through bobcat bear territory and live through it, so what if some woman takes your man and all? You can get any man you want, man.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine being that guy years later and being like, yeah, like you're like, okay, Dolly Parton's Dolly Parton. She's biggest names in history of music as far as biggest names. And you're the guy, you're at the bar now, you're like you're a local plumber or teacher or something like that, and you're like talking to your buddies at the bar, you're like, yeah, well, one time I took Dolly Parton out on a date and kicked her out into the woods where there was a lot of bear, and nobody believes you. Like, you're telling this story for like Mike, as you could have owned the story from the last one and everyone would believe you. Now you're trying to tell the story about you kicked Dolly Parton out because you were so repulsive, or she left you to go through a bear-infested woods.
I would like to really see, like, the weirdest turn. Like, when you hear something like that, you're like, ha, he screwed up in this world. It'd be great to find out, like, he married, like, an even more famous singer than Dolly Parton. Like, he's like, thank God I pushed that Dolly Parton out, because now I'm living life with Cher.
And me and Rihanna have been happy for the last 8 years. It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And I mean, I kicked her out. I went into classified. Some woman named Madonna was in there. Long story short, my name is Sean Penn.
Yeah. All right, Mike, would you like to choose number two?
What the heck?
All right, this one's wild, man. So this one goes back in history. Pig-faced women in traveling shows, okay? So you know, Mike, when you go, you went to the old freak show or something like that, and there's like, oh, come see the pig-faced lady. You know, I feel like in Georgia, they're still going on like every weekend probably.
I mean, I haven't heard of anything, but I wouldn't be surprised if I drove 2 hours, got myself lost, I would bump into one. Is that good enough to say?
Yeah. Yeah, so Mike, you're not in the freak shows yet, but pig-faced women in traveling shows were actually drunk, shaved bears in dresses.
So they got him drunk? Like, how's that work, per se? Do they just, like, fill a bunch of buckets full of beer before they start the show?
For unknown reasons, through a few of those reasons, are bound to be superstition and a whole lot of misogyny. In the 17th century, there emerged a legend of a person who had the body of a woman, but the face of a pig. So right away, you're like, I'm going to see the pig lady, right? I would.
Okay. It's the 1700s. What else are we going to do?
Known as the pig-faced woman, some of the earlier tales told of a woman who was given the face of a pig through witchcraft. Following her wedding day, the witch gave the husband the choice of having his wife appear as a pig face to him and beautiful to everyone else, or pig face to everyone else and beautiful to him. Mike, which one are you choosing there?
It's a tough call. They got their pros and cons on both sides.
I'm taking pig faced to everyone else and beautiful to me. Because what does it matter? What, like, as long as you're home.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, home is where the heart is, and you're a pig faced lady.
Yeah. I mean, like, why am I trying to impress everyone else? Like, I'd rather have the pretty pig face lady, like, as soon as she enters the door, and then all my friends can just make fun of me afterwards. It's fine. So when left a choice to his beloved, the spell was broken, and she returned to being a human-faced, human-bodied, not non-pig person. So
I just realized that they are literally saying they were man-bear pigs. They're literally using the old South Park joke.
Yes. As freak shows became popular, the stories of pig-faced women got a weird real-world twist. People now wanted to see a pig-faced woman, okay, rather than being merely told of these legends and these tales. Painted images were displayed of pig-faced ladies by people who were too afraid to get a bear off its face on beer, shave it, then cram into a dress, when others put on a much better show by getting a bear off its face on beer. I guess off its face is English newspaper. Drunk. Shaving it and cramming into a dress. The pig-faced lady is not infrequently exhibited in traveling caravans by showmen at fairs, country wakes, races, and places of general resort. The lady is represented by a bear having its head carefully shaved and adorned with a cap, bonnet, ringlets in their hair, and flowers. The animal is securely tied up in an upright position into a large armchair, the cords being concealed by the shawl, gown, and other parts of the lady's dress.
How low on the totem pole of that circus you gotta be to shave the drunk bear, out of curiosity?
So, Mike, if you were still looking for jobs, would you be bear shaver?
I mean, it depends. I would have a good razor. I want to make sure they're tied up. I want to know how many of those Fantastasias those bears had beforehand. They got to be good and drunk.
Right.
Like, I need at least, like, five of those compressor things they had in their system before I do any kind of shaving. My Lord, no. That poor bear, man.
Oh, God, imagine, right? Exactly.
Like, it was in the woods. It was living its bear life. It was, like, basically the king of the woods. I mean, how many predators does a bear really have to worry about? And one day, some circus guy shoots it with a dart, and it wakes up in a dress with its face shaved.
Dude. Almost, I would say, 90% of these bear stories we have gone over the years are always human's fault. Like, it's always like a mistreatment of bear, or hunting a bear, or being in a bear's territory where the attacks happen. Now, the outhouse woman, you know, she seemed to have a good personality about it, and was like, yeah, you know, the bear bit me, and we're used to the bears around here. Even Dolly seemed good about this, but I don't think there's any excuse for shaving a bear and tying it down and pretending it's a woman to collect tickets, and then moving that bear probably to the next place and mistreating it overall and over and over and over and over again.
Unless you're in college, then that makes sense. I mean, then that's, if you're in a frat And they're like, if you want to get to Pi Theta Kappa, you got to do this. It's like, all right, now I understand.
They'd be more like, you got to sleep with the bear. You got to sleep with the pig face lady.
All right, give me Narf Anastasia. Let me get up some nerves.
So, Mike, there you are. There's your three stories. There's your three bear stories for another edition of Bear News.
Bear News! We're talking about bear and shit. We're talking about bear and shit. It's freaking Bear News! Bears in the world doing all sorts of things. Yeah, girl! You know I like them bears and shit.
All right, Mike, before we go, what do you got?
So, Scott, you know how I brought up before the murder trail down
here? Oh, yes, your favorite running trail, your favorite place to murder.
I do not murder on the trail. Unfortunately, somebody was murdered on the trail many years
ago. Someone beat you to it. Got it.
Okay. So this past weekend, we attempted to do a half a marathon on the trail. The wifey was able to do the full one. I was kind of a little recouping. We did a 10K the day before and then tried to do this because if COVID didn't happen, the wifey would have been in Disney doing their marathons and so forth.
Yes, we know once COVID's over, you're done with this show. You guys are basically in Disney full time. We know. We get it.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to be trapped like that that shaved bear.
I can't wait till we have Disney censorship somehow on this show. Like, somehow you're not allowed to talk about a lot of things.
Scott, I was advised by my wife and my lawyers, and I can't continue with that story about what happened with me and Goofy.
Mike, did you ever have a drunk uncle? I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to talk about this at the time. please refer to my team of Disney lawyers listening as we try to talk.
Yeah. So speaking about scary things, so I was only able to do about 10. Like, I had like a muscle that was kind of sore going into it, and I could not make it the whole way, but I was there with Callie, my dog, and she did the full 10 easily. She could have done a half marathon, but so the last 2 miles I had to kind of walk it because I was like super super sore.
Yeah, but I mean, 10 is still a good chunk of mileage, man.
I'm not disappointed about it. I mean, like I told the wife and all, it's just when races start to occur and we can go to it, I'll kind of get back into rhythm and training and so forth.
In fact, a 10-mile run, apparently, I looked it up, is equivalent to 6 miles of the Genesis, doing Genesis form. I mean,
easily. Yeah. Very easily. And that sounds like a good equation right there. But as we were kind of walking back to the car, Callie, when she sees another person, she gets uber excited. She'll pull the leash, and she'll want to see other people because she wants to get the attention.
Callie's his dog, not his wife, by the way, guys.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Izzy's the wife. Callie's the dog. The wife sometimes is on the leash, but most of the time it's the dog.
Right.
But
I digress. Right. Yeah, you know.
But
pup play.
So we're near the end, and like, I'm like really sore, so I can't really go any different kind of speed. The dog is pulling me. I don't have the most control. And we're slowly coming up to two ladies walking the other direction. And I've basically found from like a lot of people, Callie's panting somewhat sounds like a bike. I don't know how to describe why it is. Maybe it's just hearing noise because she'll do it constantly, and maybe people just assume that's a wheel like turning and
something. All right. To that effect. Interesting. Yep.
So Callie keeps on pulling me closer to this group of ladies. So we're probably 3 feet behind, and the lady turned around, and I can easily say that woman could go to a horror movie, because that was the cleanest scream queen scream I've ever heard in my life.
Now, was she afraid that a bike was running her over, or was she afraid of the dog?
No, she was afraid of me.
Oh.
Yes. Yes. She heard the noise.
Oh, my God. Like I said,
some people assume, okay, a bike is coming. And like I said, Kelly's pulling me. I got control of her, but she's still got energy. That's why I know she can go further. So she's like really excited. It's like, oh, boy, there's some people. Maybe they'll scratch me. They'll give attention to me or whatever. It's basically one of those, if you assume like you hear a noise, you turn around, somebody's 2 feet behind you. Needless to say, she was mortified, scared.
Yeah.
And I had to like apologize to her. And I could tell she was still kind of recovering from it, because she constantly said, I didn't think somebody would be right behind me. I didn't think somebody would be right behind me.
So meanwhile, did you... Like, what was your first reaction? Were you like, so she does horror scream. Were you immediately like, did it shock you? Or were you immediately like going into apologize mode?
I went into apologize mode, but like immediately it was like the way she gave off the scream. I knew it was like, all right, I petrified this woman. I'm obviously looking like a guy who was creeping up on her.
Also on the murder trail.
On the famous murder trail. Correct. Yeah. And as I'm apologizing, meanwhile, Callie's still super excited. She's trying to jump up on these ladies and all trying to get attention. I'm trying to pull her back. Again, I'm kind of lost my strength from doing 10 miles and recouping from the injury. But needless to say, I was a tad bit mortified by that moment.
Like, yeah, so was she.
Yeah, I could tell, like, she had lost some oxygen.
Oh, yeah, she definitely thought you were, like, the murder trail killer, like, coming back to take her next. Like, that was obviously the next... That was what was in her mind. Like, she was the next victim.
I mean, I guess it was just a surprise of seeing me so close behind. I mean, I don't know how famous the murder trail is to everybody.
No,
I just
happen to know it's the murder trail. I'm picturing like where you live, there's like illuminated signs like Las Vegas, like pointing like the murder trail. And like everywhere you look, there's like just hayrides.
The murder trail museum around the corner.
There's hayrides through there. There's
like a wax museum where it's like, oh, don't kill me. You take the pose.
Yeah,
and
everyone does their Instagram photos like, I survived the murder trail. Like, it's like kind of like a haunted house all year long.
Yeah, plenty of t-shirts being sold out there. I mean, by the dozens and all. It's like when you go to Hawaii, you got to buy a luau shirt. You come to Georgia, you got to get the I Survived the Murder Trail.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there's so much merch that you're kind of like, Jesus Christ. Like, there's Murder Trail, like, salt and pepper shakers. There's Murder Trail spatulas. Like, there's just pretty much, like, it's like Kiss took over the store because there's just Murder Trail everything. That's how I picture it.
I mean, people think all the business happens in Atlanta. It's clearly in Hiram, Georgia, where the murder trail is. I mean, that's where the scene is. That's what's paying the taxes for the state so we can get like a new school somewhere, the murder trail.
Exactly, exactly. And keep the murder going and keep, well.
But we don't keep the murder going. It was only one.
Well, everyone, that's the excitement of the theme park, asshole. It's you go there and you know at least every day one guest is going to die. Like, that's the excitement of it. Like,
well, I mean, I guess
like
we,
200 people go in, 199 come out. And every day it's the same formula. 5 people go in, 4 people come out. Every day one person gets murdered. And that's the excitement of going to the murder trail.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming it's like a paid actor, kind of like a dinner murder mystery.
No. It's a guest. And it's, you know, you have 1,000 visitors, 999 people return to the home. But your odds are better if you bring more people. And that's the selling point of the Murder Trail theme park.
I mean, I guess if Atlanta could finally get, like, a sports championship, they'll stop sacrificing people to the gods to get that. I mean, maybe if Matt Ryan could have held to a 25-point lead,
yeah,
we wouldn't have this issue right now. Maybe
really,
Dominique
really Atlanta's defense. Atlanta's defense that night.
I mean, maybe if Dominique Wilkins could have got past Michael Jordan, maybe if the Braves didn't go to the playoffs 11 times and only come back with one ring.
That's okay with me. That's okay with me.
I have no issues, but I mean, I mean, you just got to look both ways when you're on the trail, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, because Mike's there. He's working for the company, doing his job.
I'm not working for them.
Doing his job, scaring people to death. And you know what she's going to be like? She's going to be telling that story forever, Mike. I went on the murder trail, and God, it lives up to the hype. He's scared. This guy scared the hell out of me. But anyway, Mike, it is time to go. What a great episode. Anything to promote before we get out of here?
I mean, I guess since we had Sam on the show, I'll promote a local brewery down here that I love, Printer's Ale, down here in Carrollton, Georgia. Go there probably at least once a month. They got some fantastic beers. The latest one that they put out, Donnie is the Talented Wahlberg. It's got a funny name.
It's great.
But hand to God, like top five IPAs I've ever had in my life.
Nice.
Yes, I mean, right up there with Hazy. And on a side note, I will say, for if you have the Untappd app, they have a badge for the Hazy O beer. So if you're interested in the beer, you got a little twofer. You get a fantastic beer, and you get a badge from Untappd. But if you're in Carrollton, Georgia, highly recommended. If you're worried about social distancing, they have plenty of tables outside, far apart. When this is all over, they have fields for different kind of games. And all. They have cornhole, they have horseshoes, they have frisbee. This place is great. I can't wait to go back there. Printer's Ale Manufacturing Company, Carrollton, Georgia.
All right. And I got two things to promote. One of them is a good friend of the show and a good friend of mine in comedy. One of the funniest comics, me and Mike have always said he's one of our favorite joke writers, and that is Mr. Matt Jenkins. Just put out he recorded a Dry Bar comedy special, which is Dry Bar does these amazing comedy specials for like relatively clean comedy and whatnot. Matt is one of the funniest joke writers I know. People love him, and he's also just a great guy. He also puts on a great water gun fight every summer. But Matt Jenkins, it's called I Also Have Merch. Please check that out on Dry Bar Comedy. Matt is one of the best writers I've ever met. Like, the simplicity of his jokes that make them so complex. He is by far one of my favorite comedians. And then a second little shout out goes to about a year ago, year and a half ago, we had Jeff Daisy and John on from Joseph Pope on from Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, one of the best bands going, one of the biggest bands going. They were just on Saturday Night Live last week. And Nathaniel Rateliff did an amazing song of his solo career. And then he also brought on the Night Sweats to play a song called A Little Honey, which is also my wedding song. So I was thoroughly impressed with those guys picking that song out of their entire catalog. So please go check out Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats. I'm sure you guys have heard of them already. But that's our good friend, Jeff Daisy and Joseph Pope III over there. So this was a very special episode, guys. It's a big crowning moment, I guess you can say, for verbal shenanigans here. We got a lot of cool stuff coming up. This is not the end, but it is one that we could sit on and kind of embrace and have fun with. I want to thank Sam and Megan And I'll thank Mike for for writing this. And guys, it was just a really fun episode, and we have so much more to bring to you. So please share the podcast with your friends. If you like it, subscribe. Follow us on social media, all that stuff. Other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it and keep the wind at your back.
I can't dance. I can't talk. Only thing about me is the way that I walk. No, I can't dance. I can't sing. I forgot the rest of the lyrics, so shut off the recorder.
Rest in peace, Uncle Bob.
Never cared.